And it's great to see you. I love seeing your faces and just connecting, because it's like one of those lonely times. Hopefully we're coming to the close of it, but we're still hunkered down here. I feel like I'm in a bunker. Like it was like a nuclear war. I have to show them inside my bunker, speaking you underground from the war room. But that's what it's been like. Okay, so I'm gonna, the agenda for tonight was to go through the questions. I would like very much to go through as many questions as possible. If somebody has to leave, they only have a few minutes, and there's a particular question you want me to get to, like you could send me a, I don't know how to do chats, but if you send me a text, if I see it, I don't mind going out of order. But and if someone has to leave, no one will be insulted. Just say, okay, just press end. I'll figure it out. When there's no one left and I'm the only one, that I see, I'll know it's time to go to sleep. Okay. Anyway, let's go through this. This is Nogea, everyone. I had the same question. How are we supposed to have an awake, uplifting Shavuos by ourselves? Does Rebbe have any aitzes or tachbulas or ideas to help? Okay, I'm just giving you my own thing. This is one of those things that requires a plan. You know, usually Shavuos is an automatic pilot. If you're in yeshiva, those people are in yeshiva who are blessed. You go to yeshiva, your chavrus is there, there are marmakomos. You have nothing to worry about. You're good. But now we all have to plan for it. You have to plan. Maybe there's a next door neighbor you could learn from over the fence if it's socially distant. Someone in your house, anyone's a chavrusa. They say that Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, Zecharo Livracha, when he would go to a chasana, he didn't go till after night seder, but sometimes on the occasions where he was there, he was always looking for a chavrusa. He would learn with anybody. If you were breathing, you're a chavrusa for him. So he would find a six-year-old. And a six-year-old, he would ask in yeshiva, oh, you started yeshiva. And he would learn with him Bereshis. He would learn him Lech Lecha. If he saw an older boy, you're learning Hakones, he would learn Hakones with them. This is not the time to be picky. You know how we are picky sometimes with Chavrusas. This Chavrusa, he goes and talks a little too fast. This Chavrusa goes a little too slow. This Chavrusa takes breaks. This Chavrusa doesn't come on time. This Shavuos night, if the person's breathing, I would say to make between 12 o'clock and 5 o'clock, you should try and see if you get 5 chavrusas. From 12, even if they only learn a half hour, 12 to 12:30, 1 to 1:30, 2 to 2:30, 3 to 3:30, 4 to 4:30, 5 to 5:30. The other half hour is you fill in yourself. That you can learn for a few minutes. You take a 5-10 minute break. You learn 15 minutes yourself every, you know, and in those 15 minutes, you make a seder, do mishnayos, and do one mishnayos. But if you can find 5 chavrusas, or some of them can duplicate, you can learn with someone from 12 to 12:30 and from 2 to 2:30. If you have siblings, this is a time, if you have siblings at home, you'll even learn with your kid's sister. You learn with anybody. You just find a half hour. You could learn, if you're married, say, you can learn with your wife. Just find chavrusas. There's still a tikkun to stay up Shavuos night. Be hold of that. I was asking around, by the way, one of the questions going to come up, like, you know, when we're in yeshiva, where we ask so many questions, does that take away our ability to be decisive and we can't make decisions for ourselves? That's a very good question, but we never stop asking. I didn't come into tonight blind. I saw these questions already for a few days. I myself was asking my Rebbeim different questions. I wanted to make sure I wasn't giving bad advice. I didn't, you know, trust myself. But speaking one-on-one, I trust myself more, but there's so many people. I bounced a few of them off just to make sure I had it right. I don't think you'd lose anything by asking Rebbeim. When you're in yeshiva, you have an opportunity to ask as much as possible, but you know, when the time comes that you can't ask any more questions, you're stuck, then you have to answer. What happened? I had a guy over at my house once, and he asked me a shayla. It was 11 o'clock at night. There was a shayla. He brought over a bottle of wine, and we forgot it in the kitchen. He wanted to bring it out during the meal. Do we have to make a berachas hatovah meitu? There was no one to ask 11 o'clock at night. We had to take our mishnah brurah, nebuch, and paskin ourselves. So sometimes you have to ask. And while you're in yeshiva, you ask. But one day, Bez Hashem, you'll have the opportunity. You won't be able to ask. That's the one thing that I wouldn't worry about it. You keep asking. Keep asking. Okay. It is known that I love this question. I was trying to figure out who asked this question. It's a Shtikl Chasidish. It is known that each day of Sfira corresponds to a different midah. Example, Malchus, Yesod. The world seems to put a lot of emphasis on these Sfira correspondence. What is your approach? Okay. My wife's grandfather, I was davening Marv once in a yeshiva minyan, and came time for after Marv, and the Rav, I'm not gonna say his name, Chashiva, Rosh Yeshiva, he did like we know we do in yeshiva, right? By the time of Sfira, he said, you know, Kaddish was over, you know, after Shemoneh Esrei, and he went straight in. Baruch Ato Hashem, Elokeinu Hashem, Tzontzon Tzatzon Tzatzon So Mer Hayom, you know, Shemoneh Esrei, Yom, Shehem, Shtei Shavuos, Amayim Lo Mer. Aleinu L'Shabeach. So my wife's grandfather turned to me. He was a shtickle. He wasn't Hasidish, but he must have had a Hasidish of blood. And he says to me, they took all the schmaltz out of the mitzvah. All the schmaltz. The schmaltz. The schmaltz is the fat of the mitzvah. Regretfully, we don't know all the schmaltz. We don't. The minigun yeshivas, you know, they say stories that the Chassidish Rebbes, the night before they took the lulav and esrog, they couldn't sleep all night. They were chalashing to take the lulav and esrog, and they go into the sukkah, and there is an Indian to go into the sukkah. There is an Indian to the sukkah. But, you know, you can't be yeshiva, you know, Rabbi Lubin takes out Lulav and Esrog. You know, we make the bracha. We barely say the Hindi Mukhram Zuman. Done. We're finished. You know, after a good night's sleep. We don't, it's not like we have anything opposed to it. But we can't, we're not big enough, you know, to concentrate on. We spend so much time on Limud HaTorah. And we have to do the mitzvah. We're supposed to get it, you know, to realize we're accomplishing something. We believe that where we shook the lulav, you're showing the malchus of Hashem in all the directions. And there are so many, by the Hoshanas, there are so many kavanas that are wrapped into it. But regretfully, that's our mesorah, is not to spend that much time on those things. But it's not like we're opposed to it. So if a person has a few minutes, there are so many svarim a person could look at. Sure, it'd be gavaldic, you know, to find a little bit about it. We don't spend too much time on it. But it doesn't mean we have to be amaratzim about it. You know, and the yeshivas, they don't spend so much time. But one thing I will say about Sfira, that there's famous Meister, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, the Yemei Sfira, he was sick when he was in Hungary still by the Chassam Sofer, and he wasn't well. And the doctor told him he had a rest. So the Chassam Sofer came in. I think that I have it right. Maybe it was the Chassam Sofer already. I don't know. And I'm bad with chronology, but it could be it was later with the Chassam Sofer. And he saw Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. He was still learning late at night. So he said, the doctors told you have to rest. What's going on? So he says, yeah, I have to rest, but not during Sfira. Like after the Sfira. So we believe that during the Sfira are holy days. We do that, they're holy days. But at the same time, there's so much, you know, we take everything with a grain of salt. I'll just tell you a personal thought, how much to heart I took this. You know, a lot of people came over to me. My father, you know, was Nifter. The Levaya was Tuesday of Pesach, and Pesach was Wednesday night. The first I had an outdoor minyan here. Don't tell me, there's an outdoor minyan on the dead end block. It was just our neighbors. Everyone stayed on their lawn or right next to the lawn. And we had my first Kaddish. Actually, I shouldn't say it. My second Kaddish was Friday last night. My first Kaddish was 2 weeks ago, Friday night, but that was in my dream. I said my Kaddish. But the first real Kaddish was last night. And he like, you know, Kaddish is a very big thing, halig for the neshama and everything. But, you know, I'm a yeshiva guy. And yeshiva guy, if there's a minyan, you say Kaddish. If there's no minyan, you don't say Kaddish. And I just took it like the Rosh Hashanah says no Kaddish now. So there's no Kaddish. Someone asked me, Rebbe, isn't it weird that you're not saying Kaddish for your father? So Yeshua, you could relate to this. We speak about this. I said, you know, actually, I think it would be weird if I did say Kaddish. I didn't say Mr. Kaddish in my life. So saying Kaddish would be weird. You know, I didn't almost give it a second thought. If that's the psak, that there's no minyanim, so I didn't say Kaddish. So give me a lulav and esrog, I shake it. You tell me it's count sfira, give me the bracha, I do it. So the things that are misora, I saw the reshiva count sfira. He did the same thing, counted the sphere with the bracha. I don't think he got too far into all the hinimuchans and afterwards the Ribono Shel Olam. When I was growing up in the shuls, they did it. But, you know, regretfully, the yeshivas, we are a little bit more, like there's basically 10 mitzvahs that we narrowed it down to that we concentrate on. You know, tefillah, which we can get to in a second. So I think that's the pshat. We'll get more into davening now in the next question. I love this question. Whoever asked it, I could kiss you. I'm having a hard time focusing on davening, especially Maariv. I just rush through it, and I don't really enjoy the davening so much. I don't want my entire life to just rush and mumble davening. I was wondering what can help. First of all, whoever asked this question, you're in very good company. This is the big, big, big problem of life. Can you imagine? We still try and shivisi Hashem anegdi tamid. You put it in front of your face, and then you need a reminder. We put on tefillin to remind ourselves, shivisi Hashem anegdi tamid. And all day we're trying to figure out that there's Hashem in our lives. That's why Hashem made three times a day, you know, davening, and that's why we bench, and that's why, and we still keep forgetting. And if we don't learn a musar to mamish, remind ourselves of the real musar seder, we forget that too. You know, the davening is it's a real avoda. The reason why davening is avoda is because it's an avoda. It's very, very difficult. So whoever wrote this question, the first thing you need to know is, yeah, it's very, very hard. I have a few my own personal tachbulas. I was no different than you. Don't think anyone has licked this perfectly. And maybe, you know, Gedolei Yisrael. This is a real avoda. I find if you can get into one or two parts of davening, just knowing what it means and it inspires you, that I get so excited. I got into one pasuk. It says, "Aromimcha Hashem kidi lisani." I should have picked something that's further into davening because after I finish this, I'm done, and it's in Mizmor Shir, and I'm Ashkenaz. So after Mizmor Shir, I'm good to go, but it gets me fired up. You know, first of all, the Rosh Hashiva, Zatzal, when I daven, he had such a beautiful voice. And I used to sit closer to the front. I used to hear him daven. And he used to sing. There are a few psukim during davening he sang. And I'm pretty sure he used this tachbula that I'm telling you right now. There are a few psukim throughout davening that you could tell he was like pumped. So the niggun he did for Arimcha, Arimcha Hashem ki dilisani lo simachto evayli. He would sing with a niggun. So I got into the words. What do the words mean? So you think about it. I sing to Hashem. I rejoice to Hashem ki dilisani, because he made me poor. What? I sing to Hashem because he makes me poor. Why would anyone sing to Hashem because he makes him poor? The teretz is, he doesn't allow my enemies to kill me because maybe I'm chayav misa because I did an avera. And we know ani chashav kames. If you're poor, then you're considered like dead. So if Hashem makes you lose a quarter, it's a shtickle misa. So if it's a shtickle misa, so Hashem uses that shtickle to ward off any enemies or the Malach HaMavis or the Satan and Mimela, they can't get to you. So I sing to Hashem, you're singing to Hashem, Kidi Lisani made you poor. That means any calamity, anything that bad that happened to you also is a kapara. So you could start rejoicing. You're still living. You still have some good things in your around you. You have family. You have some good things. You didn't lose all your money. You should be so happy. Whatever bed you have, Hashem did it to help you. So that gets me pumped. And I realize that any time a person feels like they're not into it, I remember in Blotchier once, the guys will complain to Rosh Yeshiva that there's no good music nowadays. They were telling the Rosh Yeshiva that we're talking about secular music and whatever. And some of the Jewish music was turning very rocky. And they were complaining to Rosh Yeshiva that we have to listen to that for the new music, because the old music is just not inspiring. Rosh Yeshiva didn't know what we were talking about. Now, he was a gadol. If I would do this, nobody would listen to me. They would throw tomatoes at me. But when the Rosh Yeshiva did it, it made such a roshim. He said, "What do you mean? What do you mean it's not inspiring?" He says, "This is so inspiring." And he picked the song, which everybody was so sick of. They heard it one more time. They're like, you know. And when Rosh Yeshiva did it, it was so inspiring. He went, "What do you mean this is so inspiring? Ashira l'Hashem b'chayai, azamra l'elokai b'yodi." Now he said it like that, and I said, "Hey, that song? If they played that song one more time by a chasna, I think people would have walked out. It was like so overdone when it came out. I don't even know if you heard of it anymore. Maybe they'll have a revival, but that's what it is. Anything you get used to, you have to get into the words. So you can't go through the whole davening. Go take a sitter. This is the best one I have found, but the art scroll sitters mean nothing to me. The art scroll sitter just means a sitter that's twice as heavy, and I never read the English, and it just takes up more space. It's heavier. So that just because you get an art scroll doesn't mean you're going to look at it. You have to find the sitter that works for you. This one was written by Rabbi Minkowitz's brother. I'm advertising. It's called Safa Brura, and it comes in lots of different sizes. I would say get the bigger one if you can, so you don't have to squint. And he has anything that the Chofetz Chaim wrote anywhere on davening is in here. And he has a few very nice, easy Hebrew. And, you know, it's Chofetz Chaim, all his things are like not Hasidish. It's the real thing. And that Arim Hashem Kiddushani is in the Chofetz Chaim. They quote him from the Chofetz Chaim, a few things. So I'm trying to find a couple of parts of davening where you could, you know, invest in, and it keeps you pumped. You don't need that many. You need one or two, you know. And by Tachdan, the Rosh Yeshiva used to get into Shomer Yisrael. I Shomer Yisrael, you know, Shosheris Yisrael. He would sing it. He would cry every day by Tachdan. I missed that very much. And then Mordechai Flamholz got me into this one. I don't know if he's here, but I just mentioned he knows. He'll get back to him. He knows. Every time I see him, I tell him the story. So in these words, what are they? During, we say it on Monday and Thursday. Habet Mishamayim Marei. I'll tell the story. Maybe some of the guys didn't hear it. It says, Habet Mishamayim Kiyen Levekeles Vagoyim. So one time by a Friday night Oneg in Miami. I don't remember whose house it was on the other side of town, not where I live. And the guy started singing, you know the niggin? So Mordechai Flamholz whispers to me, he says, "Rebbe, are you supposed to sing this song on Shabbos?" Now, if you're a high school Rebbe, which I was, the time, and the guys are singing at an Onik Shabbos, you could not care less what they're singing. They weren't cursing, they weren't talking about who knows what. I was so excited that I told Mordechai Flamholz, like, yeah, he's probably right. And they continued. So then Mordechai Flamel sticks his head in my ear and says, "So Rebbe, if you're not supposed to sing it, why are they still singing it?" So I turned to him, and it was so heartsick. So I said to him, like, the guys are just singing the song, you know, so what's the point of stopping them? You know, they don't know. So he looked at me, he says, "But how could you sing this song and not cry?" And I looked at him, and he mamish had tears in his eyes. He was mamish crying. And he was trying not to sing, but he said, you cannot say those words and not cry. And I realized, like, so you have to be able to learn from your Talmidim. I just learned such a great lesson from a Talmud. I never, ever cried one time by those words, not once. I don't even think I ever thought of what the words meant. By the time on a Monday and Thursday you get up to Habeit, you're crying for a different reason. So, you know, so I from then on, I sing Habeit, right, to myself. I sing these words Habeit every Monday and Thursday, you know, in honor of Mordechai Flamholtz. You know, like I think like if I don't cry on if I don't cry during the week, then I could probably say it on Shabbos. So I want to get on the Madrega that I'm not going to sing that song on Shabbos because you have to cry. So it's beautiful. Wow, that you think of the words. I don't have to explain it now, but that's how you get into davening. That's my tachbula. Anyway,
Rabbi, this doesn't help a Shas Maisa.
What do you mean?
So, meaning that if I'm in the middle of my Shemona Esrei, it doesn't help me. I guess it's not like you're not looking. You can't stop in your real Shemona Esrei and read a whole parish on the bottom of your sitter.
Yeah, pick one. That's what I'm saying. Pick one. And you don't have to do it during davening. And I don't understand. You can't do one during davening. You do everything else. We think about everything else during davening. Why can't you read a pirush during davening? I don't know. You guys do a lot of things during davening. Their minds are all over the place. Stock market. Forget about smartphones. That I know you don't do, but yeah, your head's all over the place. Well, why one time can't you, you know, talk about davening? I don't know. It's probably okay.
I passed him. I heard that when you start Shmoneh Esrei, you should do Tefillah Sederach, and when you finish, do a Gomel, because you want to.
Right, I think it's okay, but if you once you get one or two in your back pocket, you're good to go. It could be good. It could keep you going for a long time, for a long time. Okay, Rebbe has taught. I like this question. Rebbe has taught many different age groups in the past. Would Rebbe say the approach to each one is very different or most of the same with a few differences? So first of all, also if I may ask, which one was Rebbe's favorite when I taught you, Hanan? No, I haven't taught you. That's what I assume was Hanan's question. But okay, I taught 8th grade, 10th grade, 8th grade, 10th. Nobody told me that. I was my guess. 8th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. I did first year base mesh, and this year I did like 3 months of second year base mesh. Which one was my favorite? No one's going to believe me if I answer the question, so I'm not going to say which one's my favorite. But I'll tell you one thing. Are they different or mostly the same, with a few differences? Okay, every age does have an expertise. You know, third grade is different than fourth grade. You have to understand, if you want to be a good Rebbe, you have to understand the mentality of the people that you're teaching. It's no great chachma if you're going to have kids one day. People have kids, and you want to be able to connect with them. You have to understand where they're holding. There are books on what kids do. Okay, Yeshua, you have to know your kid when they were one, and you have to relearn them when they're two, and then they get older. They're right in front of you, but then if you don't stay with it, then you're going to quickly be a irrelevant parent. You have to learn every age. So theoretically, every parent has to be a Rebbe for every age. Hopefully you'll be around for a long time with your kids. So yeah, you have to learn every age, and it doesn't stop at 18. You have to go a long time. So yes, it's very important to know every single age. But that being said, the one thing that you have to do, you have to love your Talmidim. If you love your Talmidim, that's always, you know, the same. I don't ever remember ever having a Talmud that, like, I didn't want him in my class or shir, ever. And I never even came close to that. So I think that's the secret to, you know, yeah. And you have to know if you have it in you. If you don't have that in you, then it could be you get too frustrated. I know. I would say that person, he shouldn't teach. He shouldn't teach if he gets too frustrated. I don't even think it's a chasarn if you get frustrated. But I think the main thing is to love your Talmidim. If you love your Talmidim, you're going to figure out what they want, figure out what they need, and to the best of your ability, you have to deliver. Try and give them your time. The kids don't know what's the expression? Kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. It's a little bit vibish, but that's the basic word. It was a nice question. Thank you very much for asking it. Is one supposed to appreciate the growth process or view it as a necessary evil? Am I supposed to appreciate the fact that I have to struggle to grow and appreciate that struggle or just view it as necessary evil to get the ultimate goal? No, we don't believe in just the ultimate. What do you, press fast forward until you become a tzaddik, yisod olam at 80 years old, and then they'll crown you, the gadol hador, and then, it's all in the struggle. That's why we love struggles. We love fights. All the shmuz, pachad yitzchak shmuz. I'm not going to say it over now, but yes, we believe in the struggle. And every day, I'll tell you one good word I heard, b'shem Arishon. I think I heard it b'shem the Alshech. And it says like this. It says, we say in Pesuk de Zimra, kol aneshama tal al ka haleluka. Kol aneshama tal al ka. So what's pshat kol aneshama tal? Every neshama praises Hashem. So the Alshech says, I only heard this over, I didn't see it inside, that neshama, you think about it, a person's neshama is his one breath. A person's got one breath in him. It's not like you have a lot of breaths, there's only one breath in a person. You inhale and you exhale. The breath that you're inhaling and exhaling is the neshama. So that's why neshima is a breath and neshama the same word, because that's your neshama. So this is how it goes. When you exhale, the neshama gets all excited. It left your body, and it gets all excited that it's going to go back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Oh, Gvaldik, time to go back to it. The neshama wants to go back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's where it wants to be, in Gan Eden, with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, no, you're not ready. Go back. And he goes back inside. He sends him back. You're not finished. And then he inhales. And then he exhales again. The Shema says, okay, Gavadik, I'm going back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Ribbono Shel Olam paskins, no, you got to go back in. So kol aneshama tal al ka, every single breath thanks Hashem for having another opportunity to try and earn more Gan Eden. So that means that every breath that we take is an Isayon. What we do with each breath is very important. It's not just, we do with a year or 2 years. Every breath is an Isayon, what we do with it. So we believe in the struggle. We don't care so much of the end result. The whole thing, the whole part is the struggle. You having problems with this, that's all part of it. Adam l'omo yumlod. We believe in the fight. That's the best part. Like when you watch a boxing match, my mushel, when you watch a boxing match, you just want to know who won? No, you want to see them beat the living daylights out of each other. That's all the fun. You
want the boxers don't want to be the one getting punched.
Yeah, but that's the way it is. The fun is in the struggle and the fight. We realize it's a fight, and even if sometimes we lose, but you get back on your feet and you start over again. That's what Baruch Hashem is looking for, the struggle. Many, many, many shmuzim on this, but it's not the final thing. We want the struggle. We should be excited about it. Well, when you stop struggling, it's a bad sign. It means you're dead. Okay.
How do we make it more exciting? Inspiring and not dreadful?
Win one and make yourself feel good. I'll tell you what one person told me. I wouldn't say his name. He would say it over in his name, but I won't. So it was a Rebbe. If you know it, don't say his name unless he gives permission. You know he gives permission. So there was a Rebbe, and the Rebbe went into Chinuch, and he's a very well-known Rebbe, and you probably all know him. He's a very, very well-known, very, very successful Rebbe. But the first year he was teaching, it was a disaster. One day after the other, after a few months, he couldn't do it anymore, and he called this one, he called that one, he called Gedolim. And he said, listen, you try your best, try your best. It doesn't work out. So you could, if it doesn't work out, you try something else. Then he called Rabbi Yashiv. Now, he was living in America, and he called Rabbi Yashiv. So he asked Rabbi Yashiv. Now, Rabbi Yashiv is this tzaddik who learned all day in some shtibel. Okay. I don't know if I'm not aware if Rabbi Yashiv ever taught a day in his life. He was basically learning his whole life, and he told this Rebbe. He said, Yesh mashehu ba'America nikra glida. There's something in America called ice cream. He said, b'chol yom, every day, after you finish teaching, if you were matzliach, you got through a day, I want you to go to the store and buy yourself ice cream every day. So he did. This Rebbe told me every day after he finished a figure day, I think he was teaching sixth grade, and every day he came back and he went to the ice cream store. He bought himself on Sunday was a milkshake, on Monday was a soft ice cream cone. Every day he got through it until eventually he became good at it. So a person has to learn how to celebrate their successes. Anyone who's like so bent and fixated on his weaknesses to get depressed. So you got to find the success and anything, take anything, and then go out and buy yourself an ice cream. If you get fat, don't blame on me. Okay. Okay, someone asked this question about will you get this decisions. We did that already. We'll skip that one. For many things, we say you need to learn Musar. How does Musar help? We're going to get to that. Okay. One of the hardest things to deal with during this time is a lack of structured Seder Hayom. What are some tachbulas to work on being self-disciplined despite this? You know, it's like self-explanatory. It's very, very hard. So a person has to make hechrechim for themselves. So commit yourself. I'll tell you what I did once when I was, a single in basement. The yeshiva was in Queens, and I lived in Brooklyn. So I came home for Pesach. You know, yeshiva ends Hay Nisan, and from Hay Nisan until after Pesach is 3 weeks. What am I going to do for 3 weeks? I have no chavrusa. You know, I wasn't the biggest self, learning by myself at home. I wasn't going to learn with my brother. That was too painful. We didn't learn too much with each other. And so what was I going to do? So here's what I do. You make a hechrach for yourself. So I called up my menal, Rabbi Bash, and who's my menal in high school in Kamenetz. And I said, Rebbe, I'm coming. I'm going to be home for Pesach. And I have such a karas hatov to the yeshiva that, I want to give back something. Maybe there's a Talmud who needs some extra help over Pesach, no charge. I'll learn with him over Pesach. So he said, wow, let me think. And he called me back. He said, there's one boy who's having a very, very hard time. And I was a 10th grader. And I learned with him. We learned every day. This kid was touched. I learned with him for 2 years over Pesach every day. And just a couple of years ago, there was someone davening in yeshiva for Mincha, Balabas. And man, it looked like he was in his 40s. And he comes over to me and said, you're Rabbi Palgan? He said, yeah. You're Rabbi Mordechai Palgan? He said, yeah. He said, you recognize me? No, I don't recognize him. He says, I feel bad I never got in touch with you, but my parents were getting divorced. I was in 10th grade. I was a wreck. It was a very bad situation. Parnassa was a problem. I had such, and you learned with me for 2 years. And I remember we hit it off with each other. We schmoozed, we learned. You mamish saved me during the most difficult times. I never ever followed up about it. But you have to find opportunities, in my opinion. Find opportunities. If you have no chavrusa, learn with someone. Go to your rav and say, is there anything I can do for the shul? Maybe there are chasadim that you could do that be helpful. Commit yourself to something that you normally wouldn't do. If you're desperate, you learn with your father, learn with your brother. Call someone up. Call up the elementary school and ask if there's anyone that needs help. You'll call them once a day and do mishnayos with a fifth grader, with an eighth grader. Somebody's having a bar mitzvah. You'd be surprised. People are desperate. Any hechrich, anything that you could do once a day would be very, very helpful. That's what I did. It kept me going. I mean, I got all the credit that I'm some tzaddik, but I wasn't being a tzaddik. I did it for myself. Does it give you something to do? Okay. What is realistic expectation for students during this time? There's nothing realistic. Okay.
What's the
okay? Here we go. When it comes, let's get into some of the juicy stuff over here. When it comes to doing ishtadlus for panasa for a man's home, does it mean having a regular 9-to-5 job, or does it depend on the person's situation and how much he should put into his working and, of course, the rest of the time for learning? Okay, this is a very good question. First of all, you know, we do not believe that, you know, if someone is for panasa, is working, and let's say he wasn't a mechanic, and he's working, and he's out in the morning, he has to leave at 8 o'clock in the morning, he gets back home at 6 o'clock, and he eats dinner with his family. So he has so much less time to learn than someone, you know, like Rabbi Lubin is in yeshiva all day, and he's giving a third year basement hashir. He's giving vadim and shmuzim. So he's, you know, and he's also, he's, you know, a natural masmid. We don't compare those two. The Chazal say kolam echad amarev echad amamit. We believe that the same schar could go to the person who is working mamish all day. But the time that he does have allotted, he does it lishma, and he learns. He get mamash get the same schar. That's what we hold. Get the same schar in shemayim. If it's mamash lishma, he's doing it b'lev sholem, and the decisions are correct. There are a lot of ifs, but yeah, we hold that. So, you know, a person has to have balance. You know, a person has to be able to do it. Look at Dr. Brigida. You know, the stories of Dr. Brigida. I was told he learns a whole morning Seder.
Yeah, he does.
And
I learn with him right now.
Okay, so you could vouch. And whatever, so he made a dental practice where he probably opens up at whatever, 3 o'clock, he puts an 8-hour day, and he goes till 11 o'clock at night. And you cut out your day that way. You know, I'm not making a decision there from when you become a dentist and, you know, learn work from 3 to 11. But we hold that, yeah, learning is important, but parnasa is also important. You know, a person should make a parnasa. Only work 9-to-5. I don't know. It could be that you can't only work 9-to-5. Sometimes jobs don't allow you to work 9-to-5. You may have a job where it requires you to travel. So you're going to be traveling sometimes, not 9-to-5. But the person should keep into account what you do for a living. You know, you have to take into account. Are you going to have to travel? You can be away from your family a lot. Oh, I won't be able to, you know, be with my family. That's important. I'll tell you, Maisa. Okay. He told me I could say over his name, but I don't think it's necessary to say over his name. By the way, can I ask you a question? Is my sound okay, or should I call into Zoom? So I got it. The sound's okay?
Okay, it's good.
Great.
Yes.
Very good.
There's no need for me to call in? Okay.
No.
Okay. So I'll tell you, this is Maisa. Okay, I won't say the Rebbe's name, even though he told me avaricious to say it. This is a true story. So we have a Rebbe in our system who has such difficulty with parnasa, such difficulty. Anyway, last year the yeshiva went corporate, and we decided that we're going to be coming like a Brooklyn school, and we're going to offer transportation, bus transportation. Forget about the carpools. We don't have any room for the cars in our carpool. The elementary school, we have 1,000 kids. It's too much. We have to offer transportation. And people didn't want, parents couldn't transport too far. I don't know. The times were changing. So we decided we're going to get, for some communities, we're going to get our own minivans. Not minivans. We get our vans, you know, big vans. I don't know, mini buses. And it's a regular license. And if we don't go to a bus company, we do it ourselves, we buy them, we get our own driver, we won't even lose so much money on it, Gavaldik. So I go over to this Rebbe. Now a Rebbe has to be in yeshiva at 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, and he has to be there till 4 or 5 o'clock. So where's he gonna get another job? He can't get another job. And his wife, you know, had a job, wasn't paying enough. So I came up with this great idea. I asked this Rebbe, do you want a job? You could drive this minibus for us. You could leave at 6:45. You'll be back in yeshiva, whatever, 7:30, 7:15, and it won't stare your job. And at the end of school, you'll leave at 4:00. You'll be home by whatever, 5:30, 5:45. And you'll make crazy, crazy amount of money because bus companies are so expensive. So it would still be cheaper for us to pay this Rebbe. It would solve all of his parnasa issues, all of them. We could have paid him crazy amounts of money, tens and tens of thousands of dollars a year. I was so excited that I thought of it. I was thinking to myself, Mordechai Pagan, you are the biggest, most genius person on the face of this earth, that you found the problem, and bus companies we couldn't afford, and I'll give it to this Rebbe. I'm going to solve all the problems with one solution. I was giving myself the Nobel Peace Prize already. This is like the biggest chap I ever had, bigger than a chabura. I was so excited. I went over to this Rebbe, and I told him, I solve all your problems, I told him. He says, let me think about it. I said, think about it? What's to think about? He goes, think about it. So he calls me back the next day. This is a true story. It just happened. And he says, it happened last year. I have to apologize, but I can't do it. I said, why? Why? Do you have a suspended license for a DUI? Like, what happened? What, why would he say no? So he said, I figured out when I come back home, at the end of the day, it's too late for my little kids. I won't be able to do homework with them because I won't get back till 5:45. That's when we eat dinner. They do homework from 4:30 to 5:45. I won't be able to do homework with my kids. So I can't do it. I said, what? Let your wife do homework with your kids. Get a tutor. What do you do? Aleph Beis. Anyone could do that. That you can say no. He says, I've been struggling with parnasa, he told me, for many, many years. I cannot believe the Ribbono Shalom is going to send me a Yeshua for parnasa, and the way he's going to send it to me is that I won't be able to do homework with my kids. It doesn't make sense that that's how the Ribbono Shalom is going to send me the Yeshua. I mamish said, wow, that's amazing. He said, maybe my wife will get a full-time job. I said, but she hasn't gotten a full-time job. You've been trying for 10, 15 years. She hasn't gotten this job that she's waiting for. Okay. He said no, and I accepted it. He said no. Guys, I want you to hear this. Like I'm talking now, I'm saying Adis firsthand. Within 10 days, he called me up. He says, Mordechai, you won't believe it. My wife just got a full-time job. The job that she's been waiting for close to 15 years that she didn't get, she got right after he turned down this job. So a person has to choose a parnasa. You have to have bitachon. That's why it's kedai to go to Rabbi Neiman's Chovos HaVavos, 3:00, Chovos HaVavos Shir. Because, you know, when you need the bitachon, it's not the time to say, quick, give me the Chovos HaVavos, let me learn bitachon. You have to, that Musar is very important. But he believed with all of his body and soul that Hashem will not send him a Yeshua that way. That's not what Hashem's going to do. And so Hashem will send him, and he got everything he wanted. I'm so happy for him. And the yeshiva had to go to the bus company, and we lost a lot of money, and then we eventually found someone else that would do it. Okay, but I wasn't so smart after all. Okay, let's go on. What is a realistic expert, though? I read that the Lakewood Rashi Yeshiva, discouraged Zoom for teaching during coronavirus. Is that the lechatchila way to view the internet, or does our yeshiva have a different hashkafa?
Are we on Zoom right now?
Well, When the person's asking, this is not a queen shaila, right? This person's asking the Lakewood Reshivas and Yeshiva Torah Chaim, Torah Sambas in Miami. I assume he's asking that. But the real comparison would be, yeah, because they discourage it for everyone. I think I'm gonna just give a little hakdama to this question. You know. I know in Queens, you know, the Rashi Yeshivas do not utilize Zoom. We have a few IC alumni here who are in Queens, and they could vouch they're not using Zoom at all. And so what's the difference between Queens everywhere else? I think the word is like this. The Torah Avram says that the altar instituted many chumras for yeshivas. The reason is because there has to be a place in the world where the ideal is established. I'll tell you a mashal what happened to us. You know, in Queens, when I was in yeshiva, and still Ad Yom Hazeh, you cannot find a minyan from Maariv early. So they daven at 7:15. You know, the kol daven 7:15. When it's after 45 minutes of Shkia, I think there's they allow a 6:30 minyan. The people are not in the kol, but not before. And they do not have any early Maarivs like they do in the shuls. Many shuls over here, they daven mincha marav together, marav's right after Shkia. But in yeshiva, there's no minyan for marav. I spoke to Rashiva myself for the high school when I came to Miami, and I said, Rebbe, you know, when we finish Mishmar during the, spring months, it's, you know, just a few minutes after Shkia, can we daven marav? The Rashiva said, no, we shouldn't daven marav. He says, because, you know, it's B'dievid. So I remember Abdullah Chait was there in Miami at the time. He says, Rebbe, B'dievid, you could do it. He says, but if the yeshivas are going to daven marav and the B'dievid time, then when was the halacha written for the l'chatchila? Where is the l'chatchila? And I think that was a word from the altar, that there has to be a place for it to be perfect. There has to be some established place. This is how it's supposed to be. You know, I do not can answer for. I know there were some concerns about Zoom when it first started. There were, people were hacking in. That was pretty bad. But I think the people didn't know how to use Zoom. There are some concerns. You know, I know on internet in general, this question is not just the corona, virus question on Zoom, but it's in general an internet question. But I think people have to just respect that there has to be a place where that's l'chatchila. There has to be a l'chatchila place. Even though when the yeshiva had these rules on Maariv, all the hanhala daven in shuls that daven Maariv early sometimes it could be. But that's not the point. Yeshiva only davens Maariv. There's one place that I remember when I came to Miami, I was davening Young Israel, and I offered Rabbi Grunblatt a ride. And he said, no, it's too early for him. He waits for a bit of time. So I asked Rabbi Grunblatt why he waits for a bit of time. In yeshiva, they didn't wait for a bit of time. I think they waited 60 minutes. Rabbi Henkin said 60 minutes. Says, 72. Rabbi Grunblatt said, because if I don't wait for 72 minutes, there'll be nobody in Miami waiting 72 minutes. And he felt that there was there has to be someone who keeps a bit of time. So I thought that was very admirable. I did not take that on, but when I became Rosh Hashiva that I took on, that has to be someone who keeps 72 minutes. I myself never kept 72 minutes, and I do it really else. You know, I felt that that's what Rabbi Grunblatt did as Rosh Hashiva. So when I became Rosh Hashiva, I felt that that's the proper, that again, there should be one place. Then the Kolo moved in, and they wait like 72 minutes, so like, it could be like, you know, again, the yeshiva also has to represent. We don't wait 72 minutes in yeshiva, but, you know, after that, I didn't take it on Torah's neder if something would come up, but, you know, there has to be some place. So there, you know, there are some advantages. Everyone agrees that there's disadvantages with internet. But there, you know, we have to be respectful that there's a place that's perfect. Now, why there were more makbid, I know there are places that are more makbid. You know, I respect it because they're able to, you know, read that over. Rabbi Grunblatt once said over, like, you know, some of the more yeshivish places, they're a little bit more, we're a little bit less allergic to society than they are, a little less allergic to it. But I think that's really where it's coming from, that there's maybe a little bit of a disagreement on how far we have to go to be the perfect or not. But then I respect the fact that there is that feeling. This Hashkaf is going to come up again in one of the questions. So let me see if I can go to the next question. I'm watching my kids for half the day during the virus. Sometimes I feel I'd rather have my regular schedule than watch my kids. Is that a bit hargusha? Tell this, whoever wrote this question, you're perfectly normal. Oh my gosh, it's very hard for men to do things that he never does before. You know, I don't think my kids would ever be able to handle if I was watching them all day when they were little. There are just some people are cut out for it better. It could be there are some people out there who are probably better, you know, able to play with their kids. But that's very normal. Most men cannot handle that as much as the women can. And some women can't handle it either. So it's not so pushy. You're very normal. It's nothing wrong with that hargusha. It's called normal. And yet maybe you get some tips. I feel bad for you, but don't worry. You fit right in. I heard two different sforas in regards to opening shuls. One was that now the pandemic is slowing down, so shuls should open. The other was that the country needs to be open because millions are unemployed. Therefore, shul should wait to make sure it's really safe. Which one is correct? You know, we believe it's just a person, just to exercise seichel. I spoke to Rabbi first last week to find out what the right thing is, what the criteria that yeshiva should use. Miami, there were different shuls starting to open. I just want to know what the hargush, what's the right approach. Not to paskin for us. He wasn't going to paskin for us. But he said, you know, you have to have someone who appreciates what Tefillah B'Tzibur means, someone who understands what Limud HaTorah is, and someone who's going to consult with the medical team and, you know, start with calling a medical team and then make a decision. So, you know, that's what we did. We called our medical team and they told us they felt that there was spiking now in Miami. Now is not the time. So we held off. But other places, could be they spoke to a different medical team. I don't know. It could be they felt they could create a safer environment. I know we feel a little bit that our tafkid is not to have a minion factory in yeshiva. Our tafkid is to open yeshiva for talmidim. So we didn't feel as a chroy to provide for people that need a minion. And, you know, but we felt it would still be unsafe to take our rise for that. So we didn't do it. But I don't think there's any one hashkafa. It's just, you know, I see that the OU and the Agud, they're more or less the same, slight variations on one or the other, but everyone's trying to blend safety with their ability to, and I want to be politically correct over here, but, you know, the prison people are asking with Toelis, you know, I do feel that the Reshiva was extra, extra nizer in certain things. I'll tell you about one maisa and connect it to this. Some of you have hung around me have heard this story, but I remember when there was the suicide bombings going on in Eretz Yisrael. I happened to be the Reshiva secretary then, and there people wanted to know, there was a word going on Erev Shabbos that everyone should be Mekabel Shabbos 10 minutes early. And you know, guys in yeshiva want to know whether they should be Mekabel Shabbos 10 minutes early. What does the yeshiva hold we should do? So they were calling me. So I was yeshiva secretary. They wanted an answer. It was Friday afternoon. I didn't like calling the bat phone, you know, the back line, which very few people had. I didn't like calling it, but, you know, I had no choice. I had to give people an answer. So I called it, you know. I never realized it was just the second line in their house. But to me, growing up, I grew up with television as a kid. To me, it was like the bat phone. You know, if you watch the old Batman, it's going to start ringing in Commissioner Gordon, like rings the bat phone. So I feel like calling the bat phone is going to ring. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was so scared when I dialed this number and the Rebbetzin picked up. And I said, I must speak to Reshiva. And Reshiva took the phone. I think it was one of two times I ever spoke to Reshiva on the phone. One time in Miami. He called me that time. And this time I called him. I said, Rebbe, The word is going out that Rav Shach said that there should be, everyone should makabel Shabbos 10 minutes early. You know, to, as a schus for the suicide bombers. So the Reshiva said, you know, I'm already a zaken, and I've gone through a lot of tzaras in Klal Yisrael, and with the Chazon Ish, I remember, and the Brisker Rav, my father, you know, Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Moshe, you know, Shlomo Zalman. Not one time did they ever recommend as a takana to be mekabel Shabbos 10 minutes early. Never. I don't believe that Rav Shach did that, said that. I don't believe it. Probably somebody who wanted to get this done said it in the name of Rav Shach, but Dafka, after it was already Shabbos in Israel, that you can't confirm it. I don't think, tell people they should not do it. He says, if one couple, it's a very stressful time before Shabbos, if one couple gets into a fight before Shabbos, it's not worth the whole takana that everyone's doing. If the whole Klal Yisrael does it and one person gets into a fight, it's already not worth it. Shalom bias. They should not do it. Anyways, I told the people I asked. Months later, we found that, by the way, after Shabbos, Rav Shach never said such a thing, like the Reshiva said. And a couple months later, I was telling over this story, and maybe a couple of years later, and one Chashuva person told me, he and his wife told me, yeah, I remember that Shabbos. My husband and I got into the biggest fight over that Shabbos because he was rushing me to make light the candles, and I still had things to do. But so, you know, we're a little bit more sensitive, I think, from the Reshiva's Mesorah is a little bit more sensitive to certain things. You know, I get the sense that, we, you know, in this also, there's, I think, a little bit more sensitivity and not as, you know, if I brent on the minyan, mochel the minyan more, we're more concentrated on Shmata B'Snaf Shosechem. It's like maybe a decibel more, you know, not racing and all excited about starting the minyan. I'm pretty sure there people from, you know, would be a little bit more torn up, like that mice I told you with the Kaddish. Like, you know, I can't say Kaddish, I didn't say Kaddish. You know, like, I think there is a little bit of a decibel, slight calibrated a little differently, but it's not any major machlokas. Okay. For a person who's no longer yeshiva, they come home, how should they divide their time? We did that already. What should a person who's no longer yeshiva learn? Is it important to learn halach every day? Okay, so basically we hold, you know, the Maisa, they went to the altar, only person has only an hour to learn, what should he learn? So he should learn Musar, and he'll find out he has more than an hour. So a person should learn a little bit of Musar, and I think it's important to have Ian. A person should have an Ian Seder every day, because if he doesn't have Ian, he's just doing Bekiyas. You know, he's not going to stay attached. I know the people learn Daf Yomi every day, but the people who are really Matzliach, you know, they try and do over the Daf Yomi, you know, more than once. They try and do it twice. And Lemaisa, it's a very big struggle. They don't always know what's going on. And if you learn Daf Yomi, because I'm not telling people who are working should not learn Daf Yomi. Maybe they should, but it shouldn't be to the exclusion of an Ian Seder. If they're trained and they can have a real Ian Seder, they should have a real Ian Seder. They probably should even have Kadima. We're not against Daf Yomi. If you can do Daf Yomi also, it's Kedai. But the Ian Seder is what keeps a person inspired. And, you know, your person wants to do Shavuos night. Like this afternoon, I learned in the afternoon. I was doing Ian this afternoon for 2-3 hours. I was, you know, going through the sugya. You know, okay, if a person's not going to do that, they should do Daf Yomi. If a person needs that hechrach to do it. The question wasn't about Daf Yomi, but so, and also halacha. A person has to always stay connected to halacha. So I think there should be those two things. Musar, Ian, and it should be some halacha. Because otherwise, a person become amaretz. He doesn't know any halacha. So we can't do it with Mishnah Berurah. You know, there are sfarim you can get that are better. But if you learn Mishnah Berurah, that's good. You know, they have a Mishnah Berurah Yomus. That's a kedai thing to do Mishnah Berurah Yomus and go through that. And even if you don't paskin, you can't paskin based on it. But just learning halachas keeps you abreast of halachas. You'll know when to ask shailas. You know, you have to ask shailas. You know, a person, it's very important to stay into halacha. It's very, very important. Especially running a household. I remember when I was in high school, we were learning Hilchas Shabbos, Hilchas Refuah on Shabbos. So the guy next to me didn't ever learn too much. And the Rebbe says to him, I'm changing the name to protect the guilty. Chaim, nu, so you don't want to learn, but have some rachmanis on the kinder. Have some rachmanis on your children. Like, what are you going to be machmer every time when your parents? You can't be machmer every time. You can't always ask a shayla, you can't always be machmer. Koach tetera adev. You have to learn so you give heterim to your family. You can't ask in lechumra every single time. So you got to learn so you can be makel. Okay. This is a hard question. For young children, is there anything wrong with letting them watch a show on the computer when the parents are both busy? Does it matter if it's a Jewish show like Uncle Moshe or a Goy show? Does it matter if the Goy show teaches social emotional skills or just entertainment? So, you know, that's a very fair question. You know, there are different hashkafas over here. You know, there are some places, you know, people who are mock the gummer. I think the first thing we need to know is that kids watching even the most kosher screens, it's detrimental. So even the Zoom, there's a big hack on Zoom. It's all these, you know, so much screen, FaceTime. It isn't, you know, so great. But Lemaisa, it's interactive, supposedly, not just a lecture. But it's not so good. To have so much screen time is not so good. You know, once in a blue, I know there are families, yeshivisha families, that they wouldn't show them anything. One person told me that their kids will never, ever watch even Uncle Maishi. The only thing they're allowed to watch is their parents' chasana video. That's the only thing they watch is the chasana. So, how many times they watch your chasana video? They said, I don't know, they watched that like 50 times. So, you know, there's perfect, and not watch any screens. Okay, like we said before, that there's an ideal, you know, kid has to be normal also. So, I don't think there's any one rule, but we do hold that screen time is not so good. So we want to be memayit, whatever you can. So, you know, you want to make it a special time that once a week or something when mommy's cleaning up for Shabbos, you give them 15 minutes, 10 minutes. I don't know, but they can get hooked on it real easy. So you got to be careful. What?
What about for older as well?
You know, it's the question for yeshiva, you know, that's already for an older person. He has to make a cheshbon nefesh, you know. Sometimes a person, he needs a little downtime. I assume he's not watching Uncle Maishi. He has to create a standard for what he's going to have in his house and live by that. He has to live by it. So it's hard to, I don't want to give an answer with, you know, 30 people on the air. You know, I think that's a private question for each person, what should be done. So, it's an important question. It should be discussed. Each person discussed it with his partner, with his spouse. If he doesn't know, can he ask a rav or rebbe what's appropriate, what's not appropriate? The person really feels that there are sometimes in shidduchim. Okay, I'm not going to allow any videos in my house whatsoever. It's something that should be discussed. You know, and when I was growing up, it was, you have a television or not? But I don't know, televisions are not, I wouldn't even know how to turn on a television anymore. You have to have a plan. But a person has to know what's okay. You know, there's such a thing as too much okay, what guards and filters you can have. You know, in yeshiva, we're spoiled because we have IT people who are constantly upgrading, and we have plenty of kids trying to hack into our stuff. So we find out rather quickly. But in the house, you know, we want a person to get himself addicted to it. So I would say a person should just proceed with caution on this. I don't think there's any one answer. A person, what he's oriented to, what he's prepared to do. We know what the ideal is. The ideal is we don't allow Zoom. That's the ideal. Okay, but once we're not by the ideal, there are nuances. So it really has to be, I don't think there's one answer that will fit for two people the same. So one person told me he only watches the Chasna video. Okay. But other people, they allow Uncle Maishi. And another person will allow a second of it. Yeah, if there's a skill that's being taught, it is a little bit better than just some pure, you know, entertainment. But the kids get hooked on certain things, and that's what they want. So, and we have to find a way to give to our kids things that they'll enjoy sometimes. They'll enjoy a computer game, but, you know, but not get addicted to it. And we want to give them healthy things to eat, healthy things to watch. Those are very, very important. Okay, this is a good question. And maybe we should, I don't know what the timing is. Oh, yeah, it's getting late. Okay, I assume if people have to go, just press end. Don't worry, I'll get the hints. So, okay, here we go. I do almost all my learning out of the house. When my kids are at what age should I make a point of learning at home so they see me learning? Or if they know I am going out to learn, is it enough? But it's hard to learn at home without getting distracted. This is a great question. I love this guy, whoever asked this question. It's real. You know, we're not just learning for show. We're learning for real. So we have to first make our learning real. That's the first thing you should do. Before you worry about your kids, make your learning real. So, you know, if your learning is real, you're going to end up learning in the house also. You're not going to, you know, if you're really, really holding and learning. So, yeah, your main Seder is in yeshiva, but you're going to pick up Svarim because you just want to see. You have to look something up. You know, a person has to be real. I think it's very hard to set up your Sederim straight in your house. There isn't anything to go out to learn. You know, one person told me that his father went to learn every Sunday his whole life from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. He didn't work on Sundays. He went out to learn. It made such a hashpah on him. But, you know, that was a high madrega. He lived in Borough Park. And, you know, if it's the only time he could be with his children, that may be too hard to do. You know, that was many years ago. Nowadays, the wives work also, so it may be too hard for the wife also. So, you know, there should be learning at home. But if your learning is real, you're going to learn. You could do your Mishnah Berurah at home. You could do something. You know, do something else. But it doesn't mean that a person has to go out to have real learning. I think that's the ikker, is that there has to be stark real. Okay, let's just say which questions we did not do. Then we'll take a vote. We'll have time for one more. I'll read the questions that are left, and we'll vote on which one question we do last. Out-of-town community, should you push for your kids to go to the firmware class or not? Okay. Forget that. I'm doing one more question. I forgot which one. This is the one question I was scared of the whole Shabbos, but I did this one. I did get a little bit of help with. I'm gonna do this one last question. Yeah, it could be. It's not appropriate for the single guys. You decide. If you don't want to listen to the answer, don't listen. Is it proper to show physical and/or verbal affection to a spouse in front of your kids? How much is okay? Is saying I love you okay? Is a high five okay? If there should be no signs of affection, how are kids supposed to know how to properly show affection to their spouse? Okay, it's a real question. Whoever asked it, it's real. So, yesh koach. Yeah, you know, the question is so real. I want to give a real answer. You know, when Rabbi Shlomo Zalman spoke at his wife's levaya, he said, and she was an old lady. He was already in his 80s, and he said, even though it's customary to ask mechila from the mace, but I don't have to ask my wife mechila because neither of us ever did anything to each other that would require asking mechila. Do you hear that? And this sent shockwaves around the world. I remember when this happened. it sends shockwaves around the world. Rav Shlomo Zalman said that he does not have to ask Mechila. He did not ask Mechila from his wife with the Aron sitting right next to him. He did not ask her Mechila because he said, I never did anything to her that I would have to ask Mechila for. So there's stories about Rav Shlomo Zalman. Before he came into the house, he was walking with a Talmud, and he starts going like this. He starts fixing his tie. He was straightening out his beard. He started pushing his hair, put his hat on in front. So the Talmud said, is the Rosh Hashiva have company at home? No. Said, so why is he getting all like you do that before you go take the pictures for your chasana? You make sure your tie is straight. Like, why are you getting so spiffed up? So Shlomo Zalman said that I'm going inside my home, and it says when there's shalom bayis between ish v'ishto, the Shechina rests in such a house. My wife and I have worked very hard on shalom bayis, and the Shechina is inside my house, and I'm making myself look properly before I go into the Shechina. Now, that's affection. If someone shows that through their kind of respect and affection to their spouse, there's no need for anything else. I never heard of any outward show of affection. Affection is a private matter. I'm talking about to a spouse. Your kids, you could kiss them and hug them. But affection is a private matter. But if a person shows their spouse, their wife, respect, and to think how much, wow, how much I owe this person. Look what they're doing for me. Hopefully that they realize they're doing for him. But if you don't think that, you may need help to figure out what they're doing for you. It could be that also needs chizuk. But to be like Rav Shlomo Zalman, that it should be on the madrega that you don't have to ask mechila. Okay, that's a very high madrega. That's the highest madrega I ever heard of. But that's what a person should work towards. That he should have to fix his suit, his kapata, whatever he's wearing, that when he walks in, he's greeting the Shechina because there's shalom bayis. Shalom bayis is mamish equivalent to the Shechina. So that, in short, that's how I would answer. Anyway, we left a few questions out, but thank you very much. I guess I'm ending here, so if anyone has any questions, you're welcome to ask. But